Wait, I'm sorry, I gotta interrupt. Do you want to hear Tetris's type?
Please, please, what is Tetris's type?
Place odd shapes into neat piles.
Oh, sorry, Chester.
That is exactly the opposite of what you're supposed to do.
Okay, I'm sorry, the objective's even better. I'm sorry to keep interrupting, but man, this is classic.
No, this is not interrupting. This is wonderful.
Here's the objective for Tetris. Imagine yourself at the bottom of a swimming pool with somebody dropping bricks and other debris from above. That'll give you an idea what Tetris is like. Geometric shapes, known as tetrads, fall from above. If you can maneuver them so they one or more segments form an unbroken horizontal line, line is capitalized. That line will disappear and any tetrads stacked above it will fall. However, if the screen fills with tetrads, which is what'll happen if you let them form broken lines, that is, lines with gaps in them, and a part of any piece touches the top, the game ends. Man, this is better than I thought it was.
Welcome to episode 86 of One More Podcastle, part of the Retroids.com podcast network. My name is Eric Bailey. The first rated R movie I ever saw was RoboCop, and I am the editor-in-chief of OneMoreCastle.com.
My name is Eric Hunter. I am the audio engineer, and I'm not as think as you drunk I am.
My name is Jason Lamb, resident Canadian. I volunteer myself to be turned into RoboCop.
Why?
I'm not half as dunk as deep a peep I am.
That doesn't make any sense either.
I volunteer as tribute to become RoboCop.
So seriously, like, you'd be down for being like a sentient being?
What? Aren't we all sentient?
Aren't we all?
Oh, sorry, that's not what I meant. What's the word?
I would gladly. Yes, you mean a cyborg? Would I volunteer to lose my humanity?
Correct.
To become a badass cyborg?
Because they would essentially download you onto floppy drop disks.
Floppy droppy. Before Jason answers,
floppy drop.
Yeah.
Let us be reminded,
floppy droppy,
of who we're asking floppy this
droppy
question to.
Yeah.
If there's one person on Earth who would volunteer to have his consciousness uploaded into a computer,
oh, that'd be badass.
It'd be Jason Lamb.
Would he know though?
I assume my consciousness is there. I'm self-aware still.
Like, what would you remember having a body?
I'm assuming.
Okay.
Well, I
see it as like a roller coaster effect that would gradually drive you insane. Like, if you uploaded your consciousness into a computer and yet you still could retain memories of what it was like to have a body, and then you would have to compute what feelings were. Like, I think it's, you know, would you like to play a game? Like, that. I think that's what it would be.
I would very quickly become a murderous computer.
But, of course.
You know what? You know that murder switch? Just take that off. Like, I don't need that.
Yeah,
like, just murder 100% of the time.
Yeah.
No, wait! Just give him taxes and he'll spare us!
That'd be awful.
Like, Jason, could you do my taxes for me?
I'm just upload into, like, the IRS mainframe. And, for all of eternity.
And it would be, like, your virtual
hell? Is hell the word?
No. I was thinking of like the money
Shangri-La?
The money pit in DuckTales, of you just
That'd
like
awesome.
Jumping through ones and zeros, knowing that the code equals out to be taxes.
Yeah.
So Jason Lamb is a cross between Scrooge McDuck and Skynet.
Wow,
that's awesome.
Now that is a video game idea.
That
Scrooge
is.
McSkynet.
Yes.
Let's see Andrew draw the banner for that one.
There you go. Which is also
holding a rifle. He has one glowing red eye.
In case nobody has noticed yet, that is one of the great games that we like to play on this show is how creative can Andrew be?
Yes.
You know, like, I thought the digital demon thing was pretty good, then I completely forgot about Demon's Crest. And I was like, that's simple, man. Like, that was too easy. I should have thought of something better.
Yeah, Andrew is the co-founder and technical editor behind OneMoreCastle.com, and he's the one who does the custom banner art for all the new episodes on OneMoreCastle.com. So if you go to OneMoreCastle.com and that's where you consume the podcast, he's the banner guy. So kudos to him for his constant stream of good work. Speaking of a constant stream.
Whoa.
Played any old video games lately?
Did Jason play any old video games lately?
I tried to play an old video game. It didn't work.
What does that even mean?
Listen, like, hear me out.
Couldn't physically try.
No, hear me out. Mm. So I bought a Chromebook.
Congratulations.
Thanks. I soon discovered someone ported DOSBox to the Chromebook. I was like, fantastic. I can run all these great DOS games on my Chromebook. I'm going to load this up. So I decided to go and install Scorched Earth.
Okay.
Did not work. It would not install. So then I decided to go and install the game I rant about a lot, Wacky Wheels.
Oh, Lord, it's been
great.
A
it installed. Except after installation, it did not let me run the setup. So I'm going to have to go back to it. I did it like on a coffee break. So unfortunately, I would have played Wacky Wheels, but it wouldn't let me.
Wait, so you installed DOSBox on a Chromebook to play DOS games on your coffee break?
Yeah, man. That's what I do.
Like
the life of Jason Lamb, an original Netflix television series.
I also installed Ubuntu at one point. It dual boots into Ubuntu.
Wow.
It's kind of great.
That's impressive.
I can run Steam on it.
Very impressive.
Of course you can. Of course.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I tried to play Wacky Wheels, but fate wouldn't let me.
Hunter?
Yeah, I actually played quite a bit of the games. The ones that put them up, I kind of did what you did a couple of weeks ago, where you're just throwing games in to see if they worked and play them for a few seconds and then pop them out. Played some more Gunsmoke for the NES. Love me some Gunsmoke. I don't know, like, because it's basically just a shooter. It's just a vertical shooter, right? But there's something about, I think that what really keeps me playing the game is just how unique the control scheme is. Like, I love it that if you press A, you shoot to the right, you press B, you shoot to the left, you press both of them at the same time, you shoot straight. Like, that is so, something so minute is just so compelling to me. Like, I feel like I have so much control over a character that's constantly running forward into battle. Like,
yeah, I'm right there with you. I wish there were a few more shooters like that. It's really interesting that wasn't really tinkered with much elsewhere.
Yeah, I mean, because the biggest downfall of Gunsmoke is obviously that there's no rapid fire. So you get thumb fatigue fairly quickly.
Thumb crippler.
Yeah. Luckily, with the NES Max, you do get those turbo buttons, so makes the game a little bit, not, I wouldn't say easier, but it's a little bit, maybe it's just, the difficulty doesn't drop because you can rapid fire, but it does make it, give you a chance to actually play the game.
I hear
you. You know, without becoming fatigued. So, are those candy cigarettes?
Yes.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah. That's cool. 1943. I played a little 1943.
Oh, were you like on a shooter kick?
Apparently, yeah. Like, I was never a big fan, and then probably not until about 6 to 8 months ago, I really started to sit down and play the classics like R-Type and Thunder Force and Life Force and Steel Empire and I think that's really the big ones. But I am definitely a bigger fan of the vertical shooters rather than the horizontal shooters, I guess. Mm-hmm. For whatever reason, I don't know. Like I feel like I have more of a viewing area of when I'm playing. Like my field of vision's a lot wider, so I can see danger incoming. One of my biggest headaches with horizontal shooters is I'm constantly moving up and down to dodge fire, obviously. But I'm not paying attention, so I always ram straight into the ceiling or the floor, and I'm dead.
I do hate the tendency of the horizontally oriented shooters to have hostile environments. Like, you can't touch a pixel of any surface, or you just, you're gone, yeah, you're dead.
Immediately explode. And then if you get, you know, some sort of power up where you've got like maybe two other drones like shooting with you, those guys can hit the wall or the floor and the ceiling all they want. Nothing ever happens to them.
Why not use that technology on your own ship?
Doesn't make, you'd think that would be the first place it would go.
Right?
But apparently not so much. So
yeah.
You know. That's I'm scared because I've been trying to force myself to play Phantasy Star again.
Oh.
Yeah.
How's that going?
It's still sitting on my shelf. So
is that well, huh?
I don't know.
Huh.
This first 15 minutes are so tough, man. I just can't get through it. I just can't get through it. Bailey, please tell me you have played a retro game. Please.
I'm so sorry.
You're kidding me, right?
Well, here's the thing. I got my new phone.
Okay.
It's cool. I really like it. You know, it's an Android phone, so.
So you installed DOS on your phone.
No, I'm not that big of a dork, but I have downloaded some of the best free Android games or whatever. You know, you do a Google search, download a dozen, you try them. So I've been playing on my phone a lot. The good news is, I mean, I haven't played any retro games, but playing on a phone makes me appreciate retro games even more. The graphics are stunning. Like, I'm such a tech dinosaur. This is the first, like, real, like, modern, actual phone I've ever had. Like, I've been using this flip phone here for years. I mean, it's with the, you know, not even a full keyboard. It's still the, you know, press 6 3 times to do an, whatever. It's to have this phone with a higher resolution than my television. I mean, the graphics in these games are incredible. Incredible. I'm blown away by how good things look on my phone. I feel like an old man. Or a small child. One or the other. Either way, I'm amazed.
Right.
Oh, I'm just wondering. But touch controls are just, they're limiting, and they're kind of, ugh.
Oh, yeah, especially if it's a game that requires physical buttons or a directional pad. I mean, like, games that are designed to use the touchscreen, it's hit or miss. It's either fairly intuitive or it's just downright awful. Like, the menus are too small or, you know, the touch screens sections are too fickle. But no, like, any game that requires, especially like emulators, that requires actually buttons and a directional pad.
Yeah. Because you're putting both your thumbs on your little phone screen and you're using them. I mean, I have big thumbs. I'm not like tiny thumbs lame over there.
Oh.
I feel like I'm obscuring 15% of my view. Like, I'm covering up the game with my own thumbs.
Right.
Like, can you imagine, like, doing the podcast like this? Like, hey, guys, like, whoa, I'm using my thumbs. Like, that's stupid. Huge credit to my wife. I was actually, like, showing her a little bit of the phone and, like, you know, a few games. I explained a couple of the games to her. And one of them is a first-person shooter. And she's like, how do you even play a shooter on a touchscreen? I'm like, oh, that's actually a good question. Let's find out. So it turns out that you use one thumb to aim. You know, there's your dual analog going on. And the other one moves. So you have one thumb to move and one thumb to aim. Okay, that makes sense. So how do you fire? Have you guys...
Like, shake it? Scream at it? Like the fire shot or whatever it was called?
You put the crosshairs over an enemy, and if you can keep the crosshairs on the enemy for a half a second, it fires automatically.
Oh, that's awful.
If you're using a melee weapon, you just have to get close enough, and then you start swinging wildly.
Oh, man.
That is how the game is played. Looks great, but there is so much less of a sense of satisfaction when you're killing zombies by aiming the gun until they die. Like, there's no kinetic feedback at all. I'm not right. Firing the gun. It's just kind of there. So I like buttons. I'm a big fan of buttons, guys.
Buttons are nice.
Yeah, my love for buttons has been rekindled, reestablished, reevaluated, renewed, restored, reinvigorated. Absolutely.
Right. I did see a Kickstarter for like a, what I can't explain other than a condom for a phone. That it's like a glove that fits over that actually has a, like a directional pad and buttons, but it's completely like rubber. So they're working with certain companies who create these emulators to make sure that the button pressure sensitivity and the placement are good for this like condom.
So safer gaming?
Yeah, so like that would help, but then Jason, I mean, he just got a little dongle that goes from USB to micro USB, so I mean that.
You do it that way. It's, mind you, it's not portable, really. It's not something you can stick in your pocket. Like, you can't stick a keyboard in your pocket, bring it with you. But if you could I could throw a controller in my bag, or...
His man purse.
Yeah, I love my man purse.
I bet you got a man purse, too.
I had a man purse. I'm out of backpack now.
Oh, upgrading, huh?
Upgrading.
Good.
Need more space.
I'm just wondering if you have a condom for your dongle.
And that's the Wouldn't episode like title. Good luck, Andrew.
Dongers.
It's funny.
Oh, there it is. Wow. Yep.
It finally happened.
Yeah.
We can all die peacefully.
Very peaceful.
Sorry. Sorry.
Well, speaking of cheap condoms, we have a listener email discussion question this week.
Every time.
Goes like this. Hello, you fine and handsome gentlemen. Right now it is the year 1994 in some alternate universe. The PlayStation, Saturn, and Nintendo 64 are on the horizon. Sega is deciding to be patient and ride out the last few years of the Genesis quietly. But it is Nintendo who says we need to get a few more years out of this hardware and release the 32X add-on for the Super Nintendo to hold fans over until the Nintendo 64 arrives. We all know the fate of the 32X and Sega, consequently. While I personally enjoy the 32X, it is seen almost universally as a joke, and has been since it was released in 1994. I ask you, if this alternate reality came to pass, and it was Nintendo who put out an add-on for their 16-bit console, would it have been well-received, and how would the momentum have changed going into the next generation? You are all wonderful gentlemen, and thank you for sharing your angelic voices with us every week. Joe Walker from the Backlog Video Series. Good to hear from you, Joe.
Sounds like a bunch of lies.
Yeah.
Saying that we're gentlemen.
Yeah, what the hell?
We're certainly not that.
Clearly, Joe Walker doesn't know us like he thinks he does.
Yeah, he likes to act like he knows us.
Yeah, maybe.
That was a great question, though.
No, it's an excellent question.
I would love for Nintendo to have released the 32X or 32 times add-on. Whatever.
32 times.
Yeah, 32 times. I only say this because they've almost done it twice. They almost did it with the Super Nintendo. Yeah. They partnered with Sony. They're going to release the PlayStation add-on.
Right.
Would have used CD-ROMs. Would have been great. And they almost did it with the Nintendo 64 with the 64DD.
Also correct.
I would love to see Nintendo commit to this crazy add-on plan.
To a funky peripheral.
Yes.
Yeah.
Huh.
I don't know. I mean, I feel like they dipped their toe with the FX chip and whatever was in Mega Man X3 that Capcom created to make all those funky visuals. I don't think it was the FX chip. I think it was something else.
A special one just for that.
Yeah, I don't know. But where would they be? I think they probably would have abandoned it, just like Sega did. You know, like, it looks like Nintendo's usually pretty good at getting out while the fire's hot, so they don't crash and burn like so many companies in the past. Like, you know, let's take the obvious elephant in the room, which would have been the Virtual Boy. I mean, when once they found out that there was virtually no developer supporting this, and I will loosely use this term console, like they were quick to exit. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I don't know. Like, if they would have brought out the 30, if they would have brought out a 32X, I would think that the 64 probably would have been released on the same time, but I don't think it would have changed much at all. But I don't know.
Yeah, it would have been this weird kind of stopgap measure, really.
Yeah, and if they would have waited to release the N64, it probably only would have been, you know, 6 to 12 months. I don't think it would have been a couple of years.
Yeah.
So we're just ignoring you, Bailey. Just so you know.
Yeah.
That's okay. I'm listening.
Okay. Just over there playing with your cat.
Yeah.
Well, otherwise, she was scratching at the door and meowing obnoxiously. That was me satiating her before she...
Now, one thing I want to remind everybody is the actual downfall of Sega was the Saturn. It wasn't their crazy peripherals for the 32X and the Sega CD. Just so everybody knows.
I wonder... if Nintendo had tried the 32X and it had failed miserably and spectacularly, would the negative momentum from that with the Virtual Boy at a similar time frame, would it have been enough to discourage them from such big risks in the future? Like, would they have not made the Wii if the 32X had failed in succession with the Virtual Boy? Would they have been a more conservative, more straight-to-the-line console? See,
I almost look as the Wii as their kind of response to lesser success.
Good call.
The N64 didn't do as well as they wanted. The GameCube didn't do anywhere near as well as they wanted. They were fairly successful. And Nintendo historically has kind of followed this path of, I want to say, increasingly, I hate to use the phrase, childlike games.
No, please use that phrase, Jason.
Yeah. They've gone completely childlike, essentially. They've gone from Nintendo hard to, you know,
Nintendo
very casual.
Soft, yeah,
Nintendo soft. They've gone very casual. And the Wii is kind of the continuation of that. And because the Wii was so cheap to produce, it kind of would only make sense for them to produce this kind of cheap, gimmicky console.
Right.
Just as a cheap, gimmicky add-on for the Super Nintendo.
Well, let's face it. It's all about titles. It's all about the games. You know, like when the 32X was released, there were no big IPs. Like, Knuckles Chaotic was awesome. Yeah, like, Knuckles Chaotic was amazing. Like, it's probably still one of my most favorite Sonic games. Maybe, definitely in my top 10, if I ever thought it would be any point to write a top 10 list. I don't like top 10 lists, by the way. So, although Woody Man suckered me in, so I actually wrote a top 5 list for him. Ooh. For a secret project. So, but you know what I mean? Like, there was no just killer IPs for the add-on. You know what I mean? Like, that, and that's what brings everything down. Like, regardless if because the hardware's great. Like, was it a little power hungry? Yeah. Did it look a little ridiculous? Absolutely. But it was killer hardware. That was one of the things that Sega was always great at, was making great streamlined hardware.
But power hungry. I look ridiculous.
All those things are correct. But there was no IPs, man. And one of the big IPs that they thought was going to work for them was Doom. And that came off like a pile of burning shit. Like, that game is horrendous. So,
it's kind of sad when Nintendo has better version of Doom on Super Nintendo and the 64.
Yeah.
Yeah, Doom 64 is great. But in the case of Nintendo trying to do something like that, especially with the N64 DD, their first launches were going to be a Super Mario game, F-Zero, a new Legend of Zelda add-on. Like, they knew where to put their games if they wanted this to succeed. Yeah. They just didn't there was no pushback, you know.
They would, yeah, if they would have made a Super Mario Brothers 32, a Legend of Zelda for the 32, and a Metroid game for the 32, people would have bought it.
Yeah. You know, regardless if it was a $200 add-on or not, or a $150 add-on or not. I mean, if those IPs are available and they're kick-ass, even if they're just kick-ass by looks and sound,
sure,
people will buy that. It's all about the games, Jason.
Yeah, I agree. Saying all this, did you read today that Nintendo is possibly going to show, the rumor is, new hardware at E3?
Oh, I did not hear that. That's interesting.
Yeah. No, I hope they do.
It's apparently their Fusion DS console. A system called the Fusion DS and the Fusion Terminal.
I may have heard this, but that's interesting.
But, so, I don't know. Maybe it'll be a wacky add-on for the Wii U. maybe they'll pull a Sega.
Isn't the Wii U tablet already a wacky add-on?
Yeah, really.
Oh, Nintendo.
Well, see, that's all the Wii U is. It's connecting your DS to a Wii. Like, that's all they really had to do. Like, they didn't have to bring out a brand new console. Like, is HD really that big of a deal? I mean, because 90% of the games I play on the Wii U are cartoonish. So does it really matter?
In the segment of so-called mainstream hardcore gamers that Nintendo likes to say they try and court despite not really trying to, it is really important. I have a friend who plays modern games.
I have a friend too. Oh, wait.
Something. Right, I know.
A friend, just the one.
Will totally affect his buying decision. Absolutely.
That's crazy. Like, because Nintendo's big thing right now is they can't get any third-party support. And the problem is they're looking in all the wrong places. Like, this is the perfect, this would be a perfect time for Nintendo to go, okay, every 10 to 15 indie or small team developer who's looking to get a game out, free passes for everybody. Just bring your game to the Wii U. Like, if you want third-party support, that's how it gets done.
Nintendo has had a rocky relationship with third-party developers since about 1983.
That's true.
They've never, like, ever bent over backwards for that. It's always been, you guys are going to suck us.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah, they have to somehow undo 30 years of, you know, hard feelings.
Yeah, right? I mean, really, they've treated... Relied is not strong enough of a word for how much they've relied on their first party game.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
No, you're right.
That is Nintendo. They sell hardware to sell their games.
Yeah, that's, yep.
I mean, and that's really all it is. They just need new games. Like, they need new games from, new games from new developers with new ideas that can really take the tablet controller and you do something with it. Rather than just a quick item swap or, you know, picking plays in a football game or something like that. Which, oh, by the way, it's not getting Madden 15. Imagine that.
Wow. You know what? Even with these consoles you're creating, I would love for them to actually stick with the crazy design decisions they're making. Like that Wii U tablet, no game is being designed to use it anymore.
Oh, right. Yeah.
The thing has to be on its own, $150 to produce.
Oh, absolutely.
So it's a $150 controller that adds nothing to the gameplay.
Right.
Except being bulky.
Yeah, well, there were a few of us who were playing the Wii U at a pre-release event in Chicago a few years ago, and all of us were like, wow, if Nintendo or some other developer figures out how to use a second screen to create this crazy dynamic immersive experience, they're really going to have something neat.
Mm-hmm.
And then...
Yeah, I think it was something that we mentioned way back in the day, that it's like they created this peripheral? Jesus. They created this controller, this tablet controller. But the problem is, and I can almost guarantee that Nintendo's thinking this too, and that's why they've gone away for creating games to use it intuitively, is all of the projects that have come up haven't been good enough. You know, like, oh, well, you can use the second screen to do this, or you can use the second screen to do that. Like, how many times did they cut the cord and shelve those games because they weren't innovative enough for Nintendo. But no, you're right. I think the first developer that really utilizes it correctly and it's awesome, I think that alone will help spring Nintendo back.
It'll make a difference if one game comes out of nowhere and creates a buzz and gets a lot of positive press. Like, I can imagine two or three influential gaming journalists stumbling upon a Wii U game at an event, having their minds blown and writing about it, being like, finally, there's a reason to look at the Wii U.
Right. Well, and that breeds creativity from other developers, because if somebody uses it intuitively and other developers see it, they'd be like, oh shit, we could use it for this? That's awesome. You know? So
Pokemon Snap U.
Dude, seriously, I'm tired of waiting.
You can move it around and you're like in the Safari.
Man,
it's just so simple.
Even if they just ported the 64 version and just updated it to use it, I would just be happy with that because it's such a tight game. Like, I love that game.
I would want a little more than that. I mean, I...
No, you wouldn't. Trust me.
Okay. Yeah.
Liar.
Good question, Joe. Let's take a music break. Contra 88 by Scott Silo. I am just going to let that quick clip speak for itself. It's very enjoyable. I like it so much that we're going to feature Scott next week as well. So, cool. Speaking of cool stuff, it's time, finally, for the moment you've been waiting for. The Retro Showdown.
Retro Showdown!
This is the part of the show where each of us selects an old video game in secret. And then tonight, live, during this recording, we'll reveal it to each other. We have 1 minute each to introduce our game. Then we'll pretty much just spend the rest of the time arguing about who picked the best game. But the best part is that you, the listener or viewer, get to vote for your favorite of the three in a poll on the podcast episode page on onemorecastle.com. So hopefully, one of our arguments will sway you, or at the very least, you'll enjoy our vicious banter. 2 episodes ago, the theme was games with Universal Studios monsters, and the winner of the Retro Showdown was me!
Lame.
With Castlevania.
Oh.
Suckers.
Me, the master
over
of Dr. Football.
Showtime, NBA on NBC, and Monster in My Pocket. It
boo.
Both of those. Just to be clear, I want to be like explicitly, I don't want to leave any room for confusion here. I've won twice in a row now.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
So,
What happened, Jason?
I don't know. Me.
Did you lose your hipster
it's
flash?
On me.
Yeah, Jason was winning like 7 or 8 episodes in a row, but not anymore. No.
Wow.
I'm going to enjoy my spot on the throne for as long as I can.
You son of a bitch.
Yeah, I think I got a good little run in me. It's been a while since I've won.
What was last week's?
Last week, I am currently winning. That's all I'm going to say.
Damn it.
I'd like to just request for our viewers to change that.
I'd like to request for our listeners to keep voting for me. You know what? You know what, viewers? I'll put it out there fair and square. Pick the best game, or at least the best argument of the three. Just do that. We'll be fine.
Or mine.
Yes.
Whatever you want to go for.
Or mine.
So tonight's theme, this is a fun one. Tonight's theme is game that when everyone else talks about it, it infuriates you because they always get it wrong. This should be interestingly open for interpretation. But traditionally, Jason is our timekeeper for the one-minute introductions, and unless we're breaking tradition, usually I go first, and frankly, I am ready when you are, my friend.
Well, then you may begin.
In October of 1988, an 8-bit video game cartridge for the NES hit North American shores. Now, that is not the complete story of its origins, but to those who would quibble over such minor details, I ask, who really cares about the origin story of a game? But please don't answer that, because the answer turns out to be way too many people. I kind of miss the days when I could just sit down and play a game in a virtual vacuum of objectivity, completely separated from the cultural context and critical examination of the product. People get so hung up on details like where the game came from and all that. I'm tired of it. I'm sick of it. I don't care. Because really, the point is Super Mario Bros. 2 is good and fun.
Wow. Okay.
Well, we lost again.
Nope.
No?
Nope. Okay. Excellent intro, by the way, Bailey. Definitely pulling a Hunter there, so I appreciate it.
Are you are you ready, Hunter?
I'm ready.
You may begin.
Final Fantasy was released on the NES 1 year before my Retro Showdown pick. It depicted a world in which rage was common emotion seen in the city streets. Countries from all over the world broke out in riots, many dead, leaving only a few to fight another day. The fight would start out in small areas such as a warehouse basement or atop rooftops, then quickly escalated to the city streets, ship docks, and bars where spectators could gather in crowds and root for whoever seemed to have the advantage. Beautiful landscapes and ancient historical wonders of the world can now be seen painted with bloodshed. But the fight is not over. No. These warriors will continue on time and time again. There's no reason to fight anymore. And then it'll start again with the World Warrior of Street Fighter 2 for the arcade.
4 seconds.
Street Fighter 2.
Cool. Wow. I'm screwed.
I feel good. I feel really good.
Wow. Yeah. Dirty.
I can't wait to get into who, like, what crazy things you hear about these games. Like, I'm so excited to talk about
them. We're each going to have a secondary intro to explain why we picked our game. It'll be fun.
Oh, okay. Then I guess I won't. So I shouldn't roll why I picked my game into my intro?
Oh, no, you can.
No, I won't. I'm just going to talk about my game abstractly.
Yeah, that's half of the fun, isn't it?
Yeah, that's half the fun. Here we go. Released in 1999, this game was and continues to be both considered a classic and is also one of the most played games of all time. Pitting off a team of terrorists against counter-terrorists, this game saw you trek across the Aztec or someplace called Dust, where you could plant bombs or disarm them or rescue a hostage or, you know, shoot them in the head. Developed by two dudes in their basement, named Gooseman and Cliff. This game has been ported to the Xbox, OS X, and even Linux.
12 seconds.
I know. With 25 million sold, it's Counter-Strike.
Wow.
Huh. Huh. Wow, so none of us held back this week.
No, I think it's the best games that always get misconstrued.
That's true. I mean, it's complicated to sum up. You can't pick like a crappy game no one's heard of. There's no legacy that people misconceive.
Yeah, I agree.
I almost went that route, but I'll save that for another time.
There you go. Counter-Strike.
Counter-Strike. That's a game. I've heard of it.
It's definitely a game. That is for sure.
Whoa.
Well,
Whoa. Wait, is it not
Thank
a game?
You.
Is it just a mod of some other person?
No, you... I do believe you just both admitted it's a game.
Wait a second.
Because you know what really grinds my gears? People don't understand when mods are games, but you two clearly do.
Well, okay, let me rephrase it. I referred to Counter-Strike as a game in the loose term, just as I referred to Super Mario Brothers 2 as a mod off of Doki Doki Panic.
Oh,
so, I mean, it's
don't.
Not really a reskinning, if I may.
I've used this argument before against Nintendo games ported to America. They tend to do a bit of whitewash in here.
Whitewash?
Or they tend to just... What was the game where they decided to, you know, reskin the entire thing, made it a Native American guy, and went,
oh, Wampum
North America. I know, it's still Nintendo.
It got Nintendo's seal of approval.
So same thing here. We can't have these, you know, characters that Americans don't understand. We gotta have, you know, the basics, a fat plumber and a princess.
Okay, so let's get into how these games get screwed up. That's what I want to hear.
Please.
Nintendo.
Wow. Okay. Not what I was expecting or what I meant. But Jason, I will say you have earned this.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
I missed that noise.
Congratulations. That's pretty good, man.
Poor.
Anyway. Bailey, go ahead.
You want me to go first, really?
Yeah.
Okay, so here's the thing about... Okay, this is one of those stay with me, hang in there rants.
Oh, God. Wait, let me get another drink.
Okay, so there are countless arbitrary ways that you can divide a group into two categories. If I take the group of human beings that plays video games, I could roughly categorize them into two categories. There's, you know, the casual and the hardcore, you know, quote unquote. And even in retro gaming, this is true. There are people who, they happen to like old Nintendo games. They pop the cartridge in, they play it. Oh, this is fun. Hey, they have a friend over. Oh, yeah, you want to play? Oh, I remember this old game. Let's play it. They play it. Then there comes a point, though, when you don't realize that there's this conscious collective community out there. You don't realize that there are people so into this it's a hobby for them. You don't realize that retro gaming is a scene, is a trend, is a movement. You don't realize there's collectors and people who do their own ROMs and new hardware mods and whatever. They like to take it to every extreme they can. You don't know about that world. So there comes a day when you're on the internet, you find, whoa, there's new NES games. There's people who have beaten Super Mario Bros. In under 5 minutes. And you pierce that veil, and you're in the community. Here's what that has to do with Super Mario Bros. 2. The casuals, and I don't mean that in a bad way. I'm not using this in the mainstream. I just mean the people who just play games at face value, they play the Super Mario games. And when they get to Super Mario Bros. 2, especially if they played 3 first, they're like, ugh. What is this? This doesn't feel like a Super Mario Brothers game. Ugh, I'm just going to kind of neglect it. I'll play the original before I play this one, just because it's more familiar. And then you have every self-proclaimed retro gamer in the world who, the moment you mention Super Mario Brothers 2, they feel compelled to, like, just kind of mumble under the breath, yeah, you mean the Doki Doki Panic, right? All of them. Even tonight, when I mentioned
that
the
guy.
Game,
I'm that guy.
Hunter brought up. If you, it doesn't, you can be at a convention, like face to face with people. You can be in a Facebook discussion post on your wall. You can be on Twitter. It doesn't matter. You say Super Mario Brothers 2, some smart-ass retro gamer is going to say Doki Doki Panic.
Is that what you mean?
It is inevitable. They cannot get over the fact that it's a reskin. They don't care about the game. There's no enjoyment of games left in their soul. They're soulless. Okay? They hear it. It's stimulus response. They don't care. They don't play games for fun. It infuriates me. It pisses me off.
But they're not wrong, though.
No, yeah. They're not.
Okay.
Kind of like saying...
So you went the other way.
All I'm saying is... I think the hobby... When I say, like, retro gaming, we'll stick with that. I think the hobby works at its best when we don't act as these weird, like, knowledge gatekeepers. Like, ooh... You didn't know that Super Mario Brothers 2 was a Doki Doki Panic reskin? How dare you? You don't know how many sound channels the NES hardware had. You don't know the shape of the waveforms.
Yeah, they're called elitists, Bailey.
You disgusting peasant. Yeah, those elitists.
It's called PC gamers.
Half of... The Master Race speaks.
The Master Race speaks.
But it's just, here's my point. Who cares if it's a Doki Doki Panic reskin? It's still a fun game. Whatever. I don't like it because I'm some Nintendo freak loyalist who, because it has Mario and Luigi in it, well, okay, I automatically love it. No, it's a solid platformer. There's a lot of great things in it. Technically, graphically, gameplay-wise, it's just a good game.
I'll give you that. My question is, for you.
Yes.
Had a game... come to North America called Doki Doki Panic, would it be looked upon today as the classic it is, much in the same way Super Mario Brothers 2 is? Or do you think that's the main reason this game is looked upon as such a great game? In fact, it's a Mario game, part of this, you know, Mario legacy.
Is it looked upon as a great game, though?
Generally, yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
I think it's good. I mean...
Okay. I'll say that if Doki Doki Panic came to North America unchanged, it wouldn't have been nearly as popular. No. Like, you're right in your point about an American audience that would have been weirded out by it. Sure.
Not back then. Today, it probably would be okay.
Yeah. No. I think even in hindsight, like, people today would love to look back at it. Like, it'd be the ultimate hipster game.
Oh, yeah.
My favorite Nintendo game is Doki Doki Panic.
Right.
Be like, what? That game that went off store shelves after 2 weeks at my local Toys R Us because no parent could figure out what it was.
What in the hell is a Doki Doki?
And why should it cause me to panic?
Well, it's kind of like what became of, just to try to make it a little bit more recent, that happened exactly to Katamari Damacy. Like, it was this very out-of-this-world, strange game that came from Japan, and it's a blast to play, but not a lot of people know what it is, and it really? Kind of has become, like, that hipster game that, like, if you're in, you know what it is.
Yeah.
I guess. I thought that game was pretty popular. Like, even my sister liked that game. She hates video games.
I was going to say, is she the bar? Is she the line? Like,
yeah, like, she... Like, you've got The Sims... Katamari Damacy and Viva Pinata, and after that you're kind of out of luck.
Wow. But no, I yeah,
she
yeah.
really needs to buy a Wii.
Yeah, she does.
I can see where you're coming from, though, Bailey. That is kind of infuriating.
I mean, you can pull my argument through whatever ringer you want, but I think you understand my point.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah,
so Hunter, you go ahead. What infuriates you about people's interpretations generally of Street Fighter II, the World Warrior?
Quite a bit, actually. Just the whole, you get a lot of people, and again, it's just people who are just play to play. You know, they're not hobbyists like we are. But there's still parts of me that can't hold back from mentally bitch slapping somebody who swears up and down that you can play as the bosses. And the first iteration, or how to pull off the quote-unquote red fireball from Ryu. Like, I've had people tell me that they think Mortal Kombat is better fighting game than Street Fighter, and that's just not technically true. I mean, I think we can all agree with that. Like, Mortal Kombat's not very technically a tactical fighter.
As a competitive fighting game, no.
Correct, yeah. Which, that kind of pees me off a bit for some reason. I mean, I like Mortal Kombat, but... I had some guy refer to Guile as Gully.
Ooh.
Oh.
And I was like, oh, yeah, who's your fighter? And he's like, oh, I play as Gully. And I'm like, who's Gully? He's like, you know, the army dude. I was like, oh, you mean Guile? Like... It's some of those things that it's so bad where it's like you have people swearing up and down at the, you know, the lunch table back in elementary school that swore that, at you know, if you punch King Hippo and Mike Tyson's punch out in a certain combination, he gets back up. Like, no, it's not in the programming to do that. Like, you can't make people melt if you stand on the side of the screen. Like, just the most outrageous, oh, I can do fireballs in the air. Like, no. You can't.
Did you hear Barney is in NBA Jam?
Oh, God, I remember that.
Yeah.
Man.
That was the one when I was growing up.
What?
Yeah.
Yeah, he walks down the court like this.
Yeah, dude, Gully. Like that.
Can I give an example of that has nothing to do with video games?
Sure.
I have a new coworker. He started last week. Has no idea how big of a word nerd I am, okay? Like, I'm a word nerd. Like, my sister-in-law made me a shirt that says word nerd in Scrabble tiles on it. I mean, I'm hardcore. Like, I was a spelling bee champion. I'm that big of a word dork. So, I'm at the copier with this guy.
Where all amazing things happen is at the copier.
This happened today at work, this afternoon. And... I don't remember how the topic came up, but I'm making 50 copies of a document, and I have a second document to go. And I mention, oh, I probably should have just put them both in and had them collated.
Yes, I'm aware of what collated means. Yeah.
He corrects me. He says, don't you mean correlated?
No.
To which I reply, no. A correlation is when two items relate to each other. A collation is when a printout is sequenced in an organized manner. And he's like, so I say this to him, like, that's word for word what I said. He's like, no, it's correlated. I said, no. And I'm going to go to my laptop. I had him follow me to my queue. I'm like, we're going to go to dictionary.com right now. And I showed him. I'm like, this is the definition of collate. This is the definition of correlate. You're wrong. Yeah. Like, definitively, actually wrong. It was glorious.
It was a big triumph for you today, huh?
It's the most important thing that's happened to me in 3 months, at least.
Whoa, dude. Not cool.
Besides Hunter.
No, like, just... You know, the podcast and Review a Great Game Day and like...
Yeah, but those didn't start in the past 3 months. Those are just a part of my life that's been laid down as a regular steady thing. That's
fine. Jason.
Yeah?
We don't need to hear from Jason on this topic.
Well, no, I'm curious because like it's Counter-Strike. Like what... How could people get Counter-Strike wrong? Like it's just a shitty first-person shooter.
Whoa.
Oh, I'm sorry. I said that out loud. I'm sorry.
Son of a bitch.
What I meant.
Yeah,
to say.
Listen,
sorry.
Mods, for the love of God. I've said it a million times. Mods are games.
That's fine. Fine. As long as it's a mod of a game. Like if you modify a car, it's not necessarily a game, you know?
That's a true. Good point. Yeah. That's a
Yeah.
I think mods only become games when they take on an entity of their own. Like they're not correlated.
Hmm.
To I didn't even literally mean to say that. They're not correlated to the game that they were originally modified from.
So like total conversion.
Team Fortress 2 is a mod, correct?
Yes, it's a
but nobody
mod
can remember, other than huge fans of the game, what it's a modification from.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
But you should, because it's awesome. It's a mod.
But does that really matter at that point? It's just taken over that its makes own, it, it's its own thing
that's,
now?
That's the thing. It makes it even better. It makes it to a point where it's, you've got this thing a couple of people have made in their basements, and it's somehow just as popular, and now even more popular than a lot of AAA games.
Yeah, dude, I poop in my basement all the time. Everybody does that. Like, it's not a big thing. Sometimes
no matter how much you modify Hunter's poop, it will never be popular.
You can always, well, that's not true either, but like if I pooped out Jesus or something, I don't know, like if it looked like Jesus or something.
Sure, newspaper would print it.
Yeah.
Like $100 bills.
Especially in Ohio. We do all kinds of weird things.
And let the record state that Hunter was the one to bring poop into the discussion this week.
Oh, come on. We're playing that game.
Yeah, we are.
Yeah.
You started the game.
Whatever.
Jeez, son of a...
Whatever, dude. I think, factually, over the life of this podcast, I have to admit, I think Jason's got the best argument. Because we've been destroying him and his mods for so many episodes.
You bastards.
That I actually picked a Retro Showdown theme that works in Jason's favor. I don't think Gully is going to hold up. That's all I'm saying.
It is just funny that in Jason's case, the people that infuriate him about this game are me and you.
Well, true,
the people
yeah
I do a podcast with every week.
Whereas I didn't have you two in mind for mine. But then Hunter had to go and say what he said.
He had to go tell the truth.
What? It's Gully. So, man, I love Street Fighter. Man.
Oh, you mean Doki Doki Panic?
Okay, so here's an argument for you, because I let's face it, I like, all right, I'm not wearing glasses at this moment, got my contacts in. I think just over the lifespan of Mario and the franchise, 90% of the recognizable characters and enemies come from Super Mario Brothers 2.
That's an exaggeration. If you really think about the original characters that appear, it does contribute significantly, but I think people do overstate how important it really is in the Mario canon. I mean, Goombas and Koopa Troopas didn't come from that game, and that's like half the enemies in every Mario game, let's be honest.
No, but like Shy Guys.
Yes.
And what was the other really big? Oh, the
Birdo.
Birdo, yeah.
Sniffits.
The idea of using keys.
That was like, not a Mario invention.
Yes, a Mario invention.
That was the first time they had keys in a Mario game.
Sure. It would happen eventually anyway.
You think so? I don't know.
Absolutely. Like, okay, if Super Mario Bros. 2 never came out, do you really think there never, ever would have been a different Mario game that would have been the first one to use keys? I mean, don't get me wrong, it should get some credit for being the first to do something. But a mechanic as basic and widespread as using keys to open locked doors, it would have.
Well, they didn't use keys again until 64.
Which was, like, what, 10 years later? No, it was like 8.
Yeah, 8 years later. Yeah,
that's not bad.
Wait, no, it wasn't. Was it really?
Yeah. It's crazy.
Wait, when did the 64 come out?
Mario 64 came out in 96.
Yeah.
Holy
it's been...
shit.
Yeah, it's been almost 20 years.
Man, I'm so old. I still remember getting that tape from the Nintendo Power.
Yeah!
Where they were calling it the Ultra 64 and those douchebag kids that were playing, you know, Super Mario Brothers. Ken Lob was on there.
Isn't it like, so funny, though, that we feel old talking about it, but at the Midwest Gaming Classic last year, everyone else is like, you guys are into old video games?
Oh, I know. So weird.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, how old are you guys? Like, fucking old enough to remember what? Yeah. Like, back up, old man.
I'm just talking about the games I played as a kid.
You got new blood coming in to play old video games.
What up, geezers?
Let's throw down on some Contra.
Legend has it.
Nice.
Thank you. Thank you.
That's in your bio, isn't it?
It was at one time. So, Jason.
Yeah.
I just have a question about Counter-Strike, if we can actually talk about your game a little bit. Why doesn't it have a dedicated fire button?
That's a good question.
What?
I just think it's stupid to have a mechanic where you don't actually fire at enemies, you just move the crosshair over them.
Yeah, it's the weirdest thing.
And after half a second, it just automatically kind of fires and kills it.
It's the weirdest thing.
I hate you both.
Satisfying and better than had a fire button.
I hate you both.
No, here's the problem with Counter-Strike, especially if you bought it like I did on a console.
Yeah, that's your problem.
Well, no. Well, I didn't have a cool PC at the time, Jason. I'm sorry. I'm still working to get my membership for the Master Race, but I'm still a couple of tests away and mods to make away. Anyway, the problem with games like that are strictly multiplayer, man, once the servers are down, there's no game. Like, because I got it for the original Xbox, and that was the version that didn't even have the bots in it, so I couldn't even play against the computer.
Oh, that's the worst.
That's awful, man.
That's the problem with console games. They don't allow you to host your own servers, while Counter-Strike allows you to.
The problem with multiplayer games is you can't enjoy them alone.
Also true.
But you can with bots.
Yeah, but...
And I dig bots. Like, Perfect Dark, bots, awesome.
Oh, there's never been a better implementation of computer enemies in a first-person shooter than Perfect Dark's multiplayer mode, ever.
Just saying.
And I will stick to that story until the day I die.
It's pretty good. That's even with modern consoles, like Titanfall, and everybody's going on about how cool Titanfall is. And I'm like, yeah, the game looks great. I've never played it. I won't because I don't have... $1,000 to drop on a new console, you know? I'd rather spend $1,000 on retro games. But that's just me. But once those servers are dead, like, that game is worthless.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll give you that.
And like,
I bought Titanfall.
Yeah.
It sucks.
It's inevitable, you know what I mean?
Yeah, like, I own Titanfall. On PC.
Yeah. See, that's the same thing with PC games. You get a chance to kind of breathe new life into them with like different LAN party programs and stuff that you can run to make it look like you're running a server or that kind of thing. Yeah. And that's great. But even those, like, once the game's out of the limelight and the servers are down, nobody is playing it. Like, that's the issue that I'm running into right now with Rainbow Six Vegas 2. I love the game, but anytime I get online, there's only like 20 people playing. And 19 of them have all of their servers locked up with passcodes because nobody wants to get their ass kicked by me.
Boom.
Hunter, there is one flaw with your argument.
Okay. Inevitable? Did I use it wrong? Oh, that argument.
It's extraordinarily
amazing.
Overrated.
Ooh. No.
Yep.
There's no way you can make that. Is it overrated now? Sure. Back then, there is no way.
I was thinking now. Yeah. Okay.
It hasn't aged
as well as people would like to think.
Yeah. No, I agree. Like,
okay. Just that, good.
No, absolutely. The Alpha series was awful. Third Strike was crap when it went to 3D. I mean, one of the biggest, at least right now, one of the most popular Street Fighter games right now is the tournament edition where they brought all of the different styles of characters into one game. And guess what? It's 2D. Like, that's the most popular competitive version right now, other than Ultra 4, but...
Well, do you remember that weird period where all the major fighting game franchises felt the need to make this, like, rotating 3D? Like, the Mortal Kombat game, the first one that was... Oh, it was awful.
Yeah, Mortal Kombat 4.
It just felt completely wrong. It was like... It was like playing a game on a cell phone.
Like where you had to move the crosshair in front of the enemy. So like Counter-Strike.
Why can't you have a dedicated punch button? Like, why do I have to move in such a way that I have to like look at the guy for a half second and then automatically punch him?
Just starts punching, yeah. That's terrible, Jason.
You're dead to me.
You're all dead to me.
All dead?
I got Counter-Strike Go on my wish list.
That's good.
I'd like to get it. It's $15, though.
Oh, yeah. That comes down to like $5 during Steam sales.
Yeah.
There's a Steam sale coming up.
Is there
Super Mario game that has character selection? Not for a long time. I mean, for a long time, if you wanted character selection, where the characters actually did different things and moved in different ways, Super Mario Bros. 2 is it. In fact, not many other platformers at all could boast a character selection. That gameplay mechanic alone is wonderful. If you want to talk about, like, whimsical extravagance and the unnecessary, the slot bonus game? What a great minigame.
Oh, yeah.
That is a great minigame.
Classic. It's a good game. It's such a good game.
It's not a new idea. Like in the grand scheme of things, putting a slot machine in, like, is that really a new idea? No, but like it was done right. You know what I mean?
There's a quick little.
It was probably even better than probably the match card game and the sliding make up the face game in Super Mario Bros. 3.
Yeah, I'll go there. I did kind of like the card flip game, though, the memory game. That was good.
Yeah, but that was the thing. There was only like 20 boards. Like, you could memorize the memory game.
Oh, yeah. I had the strategy guide with Ultimate in it.
Yeah.
And it's just a question of how many moves does it take to determine which one it is. Oh, wow. You just made a wave of nostalgia to wash over me.
Mr. Word Nerd, did you catch the misspelling or the wrong verbiage in that one?
In Super Mario
Brothers 3? Yeah. During the right before you start playing the face matchup game, and you go to that screen where it says you're talking to Toad, he uses the wrong your.
Ooh.
He does?
Yeah. You never noticed that?
I guess not.
Man, screenshot that right now.
Yeah, whoops.
So you're a word nerd to push your supreme knowledge and dominance onto weaker human beings, but when it comes to the Nintendo, you just show a blind eye?
Here is how much of a word nerd I am. My mother-in-law made like this little shrine to my Scrabble dominance.
Wow.
Like, that's, you guys don't understand.
That's scary.
I will destroy you in Scrabble.
All right, then.
I will physically pick up the board and beat you with it until you are bleeding.
That's right. It's just like the chain of commands. The chain I go get and beat you with until you realize who's in command.
I like laughing in the middle of your punchlines. I'm sorry, Hunter.
It's all right. I edit you out anyway. So it's
too amusing, too soon. Oh, that's good. I'm glad.
There you go.
So, although I feel like we talked about the actual games very little.
Yes. Final arguments?
Final arguments! Jason, why should anyone vote for your crappy cell phone first-person shooter?
It's awesome. You can counter strikes.
Wow.
Okay. Hunter, why should anyone vote for your crappy three-dimensional fighting game?
You should vote for Street Fighter 2 because it's fighting streets. Is that?
Okay.
Twice as much. So,
as for me, you should vote for my Doki Doki Panic mod. Because if one more person tells me, oh, you mean Doki Doki Panic, when I refer to Super Mario Bros. 2, I may have to go out and murder someone. I may drive some country road, walk up to some person's house under the guise of my car breaking down. And when the elderly gentleman lets me into his house to use the phone, beat him to death. Just to...
With your own shoes?
Sure. That's actually, it sounds like a terrible reason you should vote for me, actually, now that I think about it.
A little bit?
You should vote for me because Super Mario Bros. 2 is a great game.
I agree.
Even better than Street Fighter 2. Or... Not true. Counter suck.
Oh man, that's funny.
And that's our showdown. Thanks for listening. Thanks for watching. I want to give a shout out to the live stream commenters, which lately is basically Dustin Faber, a way to dominate the board tonight. Sup, Jason and Brent Dresky. Good to see you as always. Captain Knucklehead in the house. We had a couple new peeps like VJ and Ian and just whoever else watches. Thanks. We appreciate it. As a reminder, if you want to email us your listener email discussion question, that email address is podcast@onemorecastle.com. Big announcement at Indie PopCon, the geek-friendly convention held in Indianapolis, Indiana, May 30th through June 1st. We're going to be selling t-shirts with our own original designs on them that are going to be super cool and blow you away and melt your face off.
And then you get a t-shirt.
Yeah.
They need a t-shirt. It's easier to put on a t-shirt if you have no head. Let's be honest.
Yes. Let's be honest here. The head just gets in the way. We didn't even cut the hole. Like, it's just arms.
Exactly. A couple reminders. Please, please vote in the Retro Showdown poll. My livelihood depends on it. Little do you know, but we whoever loses the showdown, we kill them and replace them with a clone. So it's a violent process I hate being a part of. Makes me kind of nervous to think about. So just make sure you vote for my game in the Retro Showdown on warmercastle.com. The live stream version of the podcast takes place every Thursday evening about 7:30 p.m. Central. Some nights like tonight, we run a little long, and that's okay.
As long as it's entertaining.
As long as it's entertaining to us.
Exactly. Let's be honest here. It's all about us.
Yeah, if you want to follow me on Twitter, I'm @Nintendo_legend. I like Twitter. It's good stuff. I don't have anything of my own to plug tonight, but Hunter, what's up in your world?
You can follow me on Twitter as well, @EricHunter. My indie game review blog is IamEricM.com, where I review indie games and the vision of a console gamer. Jason?
You can follow me on Twitter @JasonLamb, and I'm going to give a shout-out to Geek Magazine. I'm writing for them now.
Oh yeah, congratulations on that, brother.
Yeah, you can find them at geekexchange.com. I'll be writing about tech stuff.
If they're looking for real writers, give them my email address.
Whoa, you son.
I'm kidding. What, so you said you're writing what, 3 times a week?
Yeah, 3 to 5 times articles a week.
That's awesome.
My first one's gonna be on how physical media is dead.
Son of a bitch! Take back everything nice I've ever said to you, Jason.
Yeah, traitor. So you should see some up next week.
Jason, I take back all the mean things I've ever said about you.
It's a lie.
Only because I want to replace them with things that are twice as mean.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Thanks. So he wants to re-gift them. He's a re-gifter. Oh,
thank you.
That's what he does. No, that's great.
Put a condom on that.
There you go. I feel so bad for Andrew. I feel like as much crap as we give each other, I think Andrew's the one who gets the blunt of it because he can't
defend himself.
He can't defend himself. Yeah, he just deals with it.
He just sits there listening to the episode going,
Yeah, like if I mess up in the show notes, like he's the one who gets blamed for it.
That's why he wants to be in the show next week, isn't it?
There you go.
He wants to wreak vengeance upon us. Uh-oh. We'll see how that goes. Carrero. Yeah, so thanks for enjoying the podcast. Tell a friend, don't keep us a secret. But remember, last but not least, you are a bad enough dude to rescue the president. See you next week!